You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Analysing Anfield this week. It is a crossover episode with Analysing Everton. So I'm joined by Analysing Everton's usual host, David Hughes. Dave, looking forward to it, mate?
The show or the match?
No, the show.
Yeah, no, the show I'm okay with, yeah. But I think the book stops there. You know, I don't know if I'm looking forward to the match as such at the moment, but yeah, no, definitely. I think we have done a crossover show before, haven't we? It happens, you know, very rarely, and we know what's on the horizon when it does, so good to do one again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're doing this for Merseyside Derby purposes, but from an Analysing Everton perspective, Dave, we haven't done a show for a few months now, so given that you're the host for that side of things, I'm not sure if you want to give out some form of comunicado official type thing.
Yeah.
To regular listeners of the show, where have we been? What's been going on?
Yeah, you know, I seem to forever apologise when we record because, you know, so many people reach out and ask about it and really appreciate the support for it. You know, we both enjoy doing it. It's just a little bit harder to pin down because we're basically at our max from a working capacity with the shows and writing that we're already doing. So it's sometimes hard to squeeze it in. Obviously, we've managed to do so here. And I promise it will come back semi-regularly. A couple of weeks, we'll maybe do a bigger drill down on Everton at the back end of what's been a tough run. You know, Liverpool fans have maybe been keeping an eye on things, having a bit of a laugh, I imagine. But, you know, it's been a tough run of fixtures for Everton, obviously, kind of hitting its height with the Merseyside derby coming up, which we'll be talking about shortly. But I think there's this game, couple of other tough ones, and then fixtures settle down a little bit. So maybe when the fixtures settle down, we'll have a look and see if, you know, the form was contributing to who they were playing or if there's bigger problems at play. But, you know, as I said, we'll probably tick a few boxes with our chat today. So we'll leave that there for now. I guess, Josh, maybe should we start with talking about the visitors, Liverpool, seeing as they're in much better form and things are a lot easier to dissect from the red side of things.
Yeah, well, it's all rosy a little bit on the Anfield side. Last time I think we faced Everton, I think it was the last time, I was an absolute mess. I think we lost a fair few, and I just felt the loss coming. It was just going to happen. Empty stadium and all that sort of stuff. And Liverpool, I think Klopp has actually said that Liverpool had a broken leg because of the centre-backs problem. And because we fixed the centre-backs problem with midfielders, we kind of broke our spine as well. And that was what it was like. But also, you know, on the ball, Liverpool just on repeat, struggling to break down blocks, playing really slowly, crosses into the box. It was just on repeat. But now Liverpool have thankfully been restored back to normal. And not perfect so far this season. I think Liverpool are third now in the league, only lost once. But a few too many draws, we've drawn four. That's the most of any team in the top 10, except for Brighton. But yeah, I think Liverpool generally in a position where we can challenge for the Premier League and the Champions League this season. Just the attack is absolutely red hot, which I'm sure we'll get to. But the defence is probably what needs a tiny bit of work in terms of Liverpool's control. We lacked a lot of control against West Ham. Suffered from a loss there, our first loss of the season, and that seems to have given Liverpool a bit of a kick up the backside since that loss. And since Liverpool have played, I think, three times, 4-0, 2-0, 4-0. So, bit of a statement since, you know, a bit of a rocket up the backside there. And they haven't been against easy sides either, Arsenal, Porto and Southampton. Open in Anfield, but I think we're seeing Liverpool go on their kind of winter run at the moment, which I'm sure you're not happy about, Dave.
Yeah. Look, it really isn't a good time to be playing them. As we've talked about on the show a few times, this season it seems as though maybe some of that defensive solidity has been sacrificed a little bit to be more aggressive from an attacking point of view. I mean, if you look at the numbers, based on XG at the moment, Liverpool have got an accumulated total of 34.4. Second is Manchester City on 28.6. I mean, that's a huge difference against a really good side like City in what has only been 13 league games. You know, Liverpool have just been blowing teams away. I guess the trade-off has been defensively. If you look at expected goals against, Liverpool rank about fourth, which, you know, is very good. Of course it is, but by their standards, you'd expect them to maybe be a little bit closer to Chelsea and City. It's 13.6 for Liverpool, and then Chelsea 12.6 and City 8.5. So that's kind of been the story of the season, hasn't it, for Liverpool, where the attack's been fantastic. Defence has looked a little bit more, I wouldn't say poor by any stretch, it's just looked more penetrable than maybe in years gone by. But as you rightfully point out, it feels like the West Ham game, the 3-2 defeat, could well be a bit of a watershed moment, or was a watershed moment, because there's three back-to-back clean sheets since. And that is certainly interesting from Everton's point of view, because if we look at Everton's results just quickly, over the last few weeks, they've only kept one clean sheet across the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One clean sheet across the last 7 matches, and they scored one goal in the whole of November. So, you know, you're kind of looking at a team who aren't scoring many goals but conceding them. And for that reason, Liverpool are the worst possible opponents.
Well, it is funny, isn't it? Because they're literally neighbours, so, but it is total poles apart in many ways. As you just said there about Liverpool's attack, that is without doubt Liverpool's biggest strength at the moment. So far this season, Liverpool have taken 253 shots. Manchester City in second on 232. So Liverpool have taken about 21 shots more than Manchester City there. And Liverpool's total of 253 is joint top of Europe's top 5 leagues, alongside exactly the same amount as Bayern Munich. Obviously, Bayern Munich competing in an easier league compared to the Premier League, at least. And certain other teams, like the PSG, I think, potentially Real Madrid and the Spanish teams have actually played a game more, I think, than Liverpool. And I think one of the main things attached to Liverpool's season so far, one of the weird quirks, is that of the, I think it's 20 games played in all competitions this season, Liverpool have scored at least 2 in 19 of them, which is just ridiculous. Chelsea are the only team to keep Liverpool to one goal. And a lot of that, you could say, stemmed from them getting a man sent off and literally sitting behind the ball for the rest of the game, which Liverpool should be able to break them down, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't attack versus defence for the final part of that game. So, as I said, Liverpool's attack is very, very hot at them, and it's almost a case of, if you want to get in from Liverpool at the moment, you have to score 2. That's kind of how it works at the minute. If you look at Brighton, if you look at Brentford, West Ham, they all managed to find a net twice against Liverpool to come away with a point or to come away with a win. Obviously, Everton, Dave, from your perspective, struggling a little bit in that department. But just generally then, from an Everton perspective, how's things looking over there? What's it like at Goodison Park at the moment? Just generally speaking, you know.
Yeah. it's obviously really difficult at the moment. You know, Benitez come in. It was a controversial appointment. I'll get your thoughts on that shortly, Josh, from a Liverpool perspective. But Benitez come in, unpopular appointment. But what I would say is, first few weeks, he spoke really well. And obviously Liverpool fans listening will know that he does tend to do that. You know, he tends to speak well of the game. And a lot of what he was saying was what fans, I believe, wanted to hear. And those first few weeks, he kind of was pulling people on the side. You know, Everton went it's easy to forget now because they run their in, but across their opening seven league games, Everton only lost one match, and that was against Aston Villa, 3-0. Very bizarre game. I don't know if you caught it, Josh, but it was quite even, and Villa get the first goal and kind of, it was almost quick fire. It scored about three goals in 10 minutes. But, you know, certainly the underlying numbers painted it as a fairly even contest. So there wasn't that much to worry about. And then early October, go to Old Trafford. Obviously, we know United are United, and they were on at the start of their own problems. But there was a 1-1 draw in there, and Everton played really well in that game. So, you know, you were heading into the October international break thinking, okay, this looks like a really competitive side. Ironically, I think we recorded there analysing Everton around that period, Josh, where we were kind of, how to put this, we were more optimistic about the prospects of how Everton could perform this year. You know, we broke it down as, you know, Benitez quite a pragmatic manager. You know, he can organise a team. Everton have brought in some decent players to play on the counter with pace. You know, bringing in Townsend, Gray looked really sharp, and obviously you've got then Calvert-Lewin up top. Calvert-Lewin's obviously missed a lot of the season since, and the results have downturned as well. And I guess that is probably one of the biggest influences or impacts on Everton's form at the moment. Is, you know, they are missing key individuals. You know, the Calvert-Lewin, the Corey, obviously had a broken foot, you know, something along those lines that kept him out for about 5 weeks. Yeah, Rumina is probably Everton's best centre back. He's gone as well, and it's basically the spine of the team. And I think, and maybe this is a wider thing we'll come on to shortly, but a difference between Everton and Liverpool, a big one. One of many, I should say, is if you look at the problems and the differences in the approach to recruitment over the years, for me, Liverpool have done a really good job of, because they've got a fully aligned club and they've got a specific way of playing. They know what profiles they want on the side. They've been able to target those players recruitment-wise. Everton have really done that. They bounce from manager to manager, style to style. Which has kind of give you this jumbled squad of completely different like profiles, you know, players who don't tend to shoot a certain way, who can't come in the place of one player and then replicate what they do. To, you know, really good example for Liverpool. This will be lost on half the audience, but Tomiskas coming in for Robertson, and we've seen this year, you know, 12 months in, obviously it was a slow start, but 12 months in, he's really kind of settled into being like not only a Robertson understudy, but almost like an alternative option, where Liverpool don't really have to adjust much tactically. Now, if you look at Everton, you lose Calvert-Lewin, and who's the reserve striker? You got Salman Rondon. Okay, he might be considered tall, bit of a target man, but the reality is, in terms of player profiles, they're completely different, aren't they? You know, Calvert-Lewin is much better in the air. He's more mobile, more agile. He brings a lot more, whereas Rondon's very, very rigid, very slow, not very mobile. So if then you were, like, I don't know if you caught the game on Sunday, Josh, against Brentford, but if you're then trying to implement this style of play where you end up putting 25 crosses into the box and the Rondon's the person you're aiming for, it doesn't really matter how great the crosses are. There's a good chance they won't lead to much, and that's what happens. So hopefully, you know, that kind of summarises just a fraction of the issues at the moment.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I will say, just on Rondon though, I think that'd be a slightly different story if he was at Everton maybe 6 years ago. But I think the fact he's now 32, I do agree with what you're saying. I think it's a totally different story now. But I think at his pomp, he was kind of like that relatively mobile physical striker who could occupy a defensive line on his own. But obviously, you know, spent a few years in China and things. He came back. I think he started a little bit unfit. He was forced into proceedings without full fitness and stuff. And I think he suffered a little bit. But just in terms of Everton, no, I think I'm obviously a bit of an outsider when it comes to this sort of thing. But I've been a little bit surprised at the grief maybe that Rafa's got, and the unhappiness maybe. Because I think, although the results have not been good by any means, I do think you can just put virtually all of it down to players, the player availability. You know, but you've had injuries. That's the bottom line. I think if you look at the players that Rafa's had out, they would have been the players at the start of the season. If you'd have asked them, right, you can have three players fit from start to finish for the whole season. Available every week. Calvert-Lewin would definitely be one. And then the others would probably consist of possibly a Mina, possibly of a Charleston, possibly a Decore, specifically Decore in this system at least, because he seems really well suited to it. Mm. But that, you know, that hasn't been the case. You haven't had the players available. And I think naturally results have dropped off since those players have been absent. So although I think it's, I mean, I've just got an email through now, literally while you were speaking, saying Rafa Benitez odds-on favourites to be the next Premier League manager sacked. I mean, is that an actual possibility? Because from my perspective, if I was Everton's owner or whatever, analysing the situation, I would absolutely admit it's not good. But I do think there's legitimate reasons why things are happening at the minute.
Yeah, and so do I. And for me, I had a piece come out this morning on the Liverpool Echo, you know, if anyone wants to check it out, red or blue. And it was basically, you know, it was about maybe 600 words about what's going wrong and how Everton got to where they are. And I don't think there's any mention of Benitez in there. Genuinely, I don't think I mentioned him once. Because for me, the basically this is kind of an accumulation of mistake after mistake after mistake across the kind of Mashiri era. And I said on Sunday, I do wonder whether we're now going to be in a position where there should be more scrutiny on the board, because there is this almost reactive response of get the manager needs to go. I think Benitez's problem is he's unpopular because of the Liverpool connections. I think that'll never go. And I said to you, didn't I, at the start of the season, that was my biggest concern. But I do believe his hands have been tied a little bit. And okay, I think he's made some mistakes, as all managers do. You know, we do this show. Come on, sorry.
I was going to say, I think they've been very tied, to be honest. I don't think it's been a little bit. I think, you know, considering what he had to operate with in the transfer market and then considering the injuries he's been presented with, I think he's been really restricted, I think.
Yeah, he has, yeah. But what I was going to say was you can always find a fault after the game. You know, if you didn't like a specific substitution, you thought setup was a little bit wrong. But the thing is, like, every manager does that. We do this show every week, and many a time we've said, I don't know why Klopp did that. I'm not sure if I agree with that substitution, or I don't think he needed to set up that way. And Klopp's, you know, undisputed in terms of being one of the best in the game. You know, so you can always find that ammunition. But I think what goes against Benitez, as I said, is there's a Liverpool connection there. But the general discourse for me should be aimed higher. I mean, look at this Mashiri era. You know, he comes in, I think we're all 5 or 6 years in now. And I think you can categorically say during his time, and I don't think this is through any malicious actions by him. I think it's just sadly, you know, he's made poor decisions again and again. But if you look at it, Everton, it's basically been a disaster. If we're going to be honest about it, it's been a disaster. Because when he come in, I try and think of that team, you'll probably remember it as well, Josh, there was a really good span of players. There was John Stones, top player, Barkley, you know, maybe the joy start with Barkley, but he was still a top young player. Romelu Lukaku, of course, you know, just a good span of players, teams in Europe at the time. In his fit, when he came in February in that year, Everton had got to the semi-final League Cup, semi-final the FA Cup. I think they had a mid-table finish and Martinez was sacked, but, you know, basically that they still had good foundations in which to build on. Now, 5 years down the line, you think Everton have spent, I don't know what the figure is now, let's say 500 million. You spent 500 million. They've had maybe 5-6 managers in that time, including interims. They've had a million and one different kind of philosophies and styles and, you know, different recruitment plans, etc. And now you look at the team that it is now, you know, you turn to players like Andros Townsend, who's done well. Don't get me wrong, he's done well and he's come in, but you turn to him to be a regular. And that was, this was the same player who was released by Crystal Palace in the summer. You know, and now we're in a position where the squad's nowhere near as good 5 years on, and you can't even spend because of FFP and the amount of mistakes that you have made in the market. So to go back to the original point, Josh, I do understand what you're saying about Benitez, and I'd agree. I think his hands have been really tired, and the issues, it's almost like the chickens have come home to roost a little bit.
Yeah, and Benitez is in charge while that's happening.
Yeah.
That's kind of how, yeah. But I think I would look at the situation, and although it's I must under very, very, very frustrating and things like that as a fan, I just don't think the coach is to blame in this situation. I don't think you're going to get anywhere from getting rid of the coach. Not, I don't know if the coach is necessarily a long-term solution for Everton. I think he's more of a long-term solution than Ancelotti was, though. But I do think that it's no point in getting rid of him. I just don't think I think he's suffered at the minute as a result of decisions made before him, injuries, and, you know, not being able to bring in his own players, and the players he did bring in, to be fair, have contributed. And Rafa does generally have a decent hit rate in the transfer market over the years. I'm just looking at Everton's side, actually, Dave. You just made me go back to 2016 just to have a general look at what the squad was like. There's a few players that you just probably wouldn't want around, but one player that you forgot before was Idrissa Gueye, top player. Gareth Barry was in there, Kevin Morales was about, but there was also the likes of Yannick Bolasie in there, and I'm not sure what to take as of Ashley Williams.
Really unpopular.
Yeah,
but, you know, the point is, it was a solid structure to build on, wasn't it?
I know what you mean. Yeah,
yeah. And there are question marks. I mean, just on then, Benitez. So you asked, do you think it's realistic that he could get sacked? I've just had a quick look now at an Everton fan page on Twitter. A fairly, you know, solid one. Got about 50,000 followers, and they put out the Benitez debate. Because they basically say you can't keep sacking managers, but is he the right manager to stay on? What would you do? It's got just under 4,000 votes, and 45% say he needs more time, and 55% say he should be sacked.
So that's actually better than I expected.
Is it really?
I thought it was worse than that. So that's good. Because I do think he generally needs more time. You know, if you look at even from a Liverpool perspective, Jurgen Klopp and the strength of Liverpool's squad, we suffered from major injuries last season. You know, I'm not sure what the Liverpool equivalent is of Calvert-Lewin, but the Liverpool equivalent of Calvert-Lewin is probably Salah or Van Dijk, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And by the way, we're not comparing the two.
No, of course.
You're just making the point of equivalence to in respect of the team. Before anyone, you know, loses the hair.
Yeah, massive caveat there. Let's put a big disclaimer underneath the video here, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and Liverpool fell off a cliff. It can happen. You know, that's just how it goes, really. And I think Everton have just kind of got to bear with it. And I think once Calvert-Lewin comes back, Mean is in the side a bit more often. I think the Corey's recently back anyway. And Richarlison's regularly, I mean, Richarlison's had a mad season, I think, from an outside perspective, because he's playing for the Brazil all the time when he doesn't really need to be, you know, for the Olympics and things like that. And then he's already missing games because he's had 5 yellow cards. So, you know, that's not doing anyone any favours. But I think when Everton have got a full 11 out, as he did for bits at the start of the season. He can give anyone a game, but I think this time around against Liverpool, I do agree with you. I don't think it's a good sign to be facing Liverpool. I think Liverpool are very hot at the minute.
Just before we move on to Liverpool, have you had a look at Everton profile-wise, like underlying numbers-wise as of yet or recently?
Only glances. I had a glance at you know, the general expected goal difference and the goal difference and things like that. And it generally looks like so far it's been a bit of a coin flip for Everton to win a game. Because he looked very middle of the road when it comes to that sort of thing. Obviously, in terms of goal difference now, they've conceded 4 goals more than they've scored. And a bit of a mixed bag in terms of results, 4 wins, 3 losses, sorry, 3 draws and 6 losses. Why is the end you want to highlight there?
I just think, well, the obvious thing is, which might seem, you know, quite funny to you, who's obviously been out the bubble a little bit, or maybe Liverpool fans listening, but I think there's a genuine concern that Everton fans think they could get relegated this year on the back of this run and all the kind of malaise that's going on around the club. But the reason I point it out, because I just think it's good to probably point out to appease fears a little bit that, you know, it has looked bad, especially on this form in this run, but Everton don't look like a team that are, you know, on the brink of a relegation battle. I know points-wise, they're only 6 points clear, but, you know, so are United. In terms of, you know, shots against, the right in the middle of the road. Actually, you know, in terms of shots they generate, there's only the kind of top 6 who've hit more so far this season, and they're kind of in decent company in terms of shots faced. And then looking at just, and these are really simple metrics, obviously, but just to give you a feel, in terms of XG, they're 1, 2, 3, about top 7, top 8 for XG, kind of top 11, top 10, 11 for XG against. So they're basically a middle of the road side on the performance numbers, which obviously it's not inspiring stuff, but it's probably comforting enough for fans that it shouldn't really end in there. In any sort of relegation battle?
No, I don't think relegation's a threat at all. To be honest, I can't see that happen. And I think, again, if you look back at when they had a fully fit team, if you look back at the start of the season and the numbers attached to those games, Everton were generally better than most of the teams that they faced, convincingly better than Southampton, better than Leeds, better than Brighton, level with Burnley in a certain game. Villa, when they lost 3-0, Villa were marginally better than Norwich. They give Manchester United a game away from home because of Snaster, I think, at the end. I think what Everton need just generally is I think you can compare it to Liverpool a few years back. Everton remind me of Liverpool around the time that FSG took charge, because Liverpool were chasing an identity, didn't really have one, and we were signing players I think the window before FSG came in, Liverpool bought Joe Cole, Christian Poulsen, and somebody else who was like getting on somewhere else who was well past
was it that Morelos, maybe?
We bought Morelos. To be honest, he was the worst buy. I think he was bought though, yeah, you're right, but he wasn't amongst the worst of them. There's someone else I can't think of who it was, but Liverpool were basically just signing players who were never going to be solutions, were never going to be long-term contributors.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One thing I've gauged, if you compare, for example, FSG and Mishiri, massive difference in terms of how willing FSG are to look at tomorrow compared to how impatient, to me, Mashiri seems to achieve what he wants to achieve. Obviously, he wants Everton to be a European club, probably wants to break into top four and things and all this sort of stuff. But the way in which he's done it, it has come across like he's been a bit impatient. And as a result of those short-term moves, Everton have stood still, I think, really the whole time. Whereas if at the start of his journey, he started to put in blocks that FSG started to put in, think of where Everton might be now, you know, 5 years later. Everton could be now in a really healthy place based on Mashiri's time. So as a result of him,
just to add to your point, and throwing 500 million or whatever they spent in that time. Like, if someone said, you know, you've got 5 years and 500 million, go and make yourself a top side, you know, you'd love it.
Yeah. But as a result of him wanting to speed things up, he's wasted more time, you know, and it's set Everton back even more. And I think from a Liverpool perspective, one thing I've certainly picked up on as a fan over the years is, it's an absolute nightmare when you get in the play at the wrong player. It doesn't have set you back. You look at Man United. At Man United at the moment, they were having a good year last season, progressing, generally getting there a little bit better every year and all that sort of stuff. It just takes one bad signing, and that bad signing was Ronaldo. Just was not needed, was not suited. Now a tactical problem. All that, and I've now fell off a cliff, and the manager's been sacked and all that sort of stuff. But getting those signings right, getting in the right players, it's so important. And having an identity running throughout your club is Everton. You know, it's so important when it comes to aligning your decision making, when it comes to promoting academy graduates, when it comes to getting in the right coaches, searching for the right players, just all that sort of stuff. And I think that's one department where Mashiri's majorly fell short in terms of, like, you know, I think he's arguably match the wealth of FSG at times, I'm guessing, but in terms of the sporting expertise, not even close.
I guess before we move on a little bit more to talk about Liverpool and maybe the match specifically, I've got a two-pronged question for you then. The first is, where do you think Everton will finish this year? And the second is, I agree with everything you've said, by the way. You know the way, obviously, Liverpool were operating in that way prior to FSG, and then it only changed when FSG come in. Do you foresee that it'll change under Mashiri, or do you think that Everton could sleepwalk to something more severe because he may never learn?
In terms of the second... sorry, what was the first question again?
First is where you think would you finish, or maybe finish, right, maybe yeah, finish on that one.
No, I think in terms of where Everton will finish, let's have a quick look at the league, because I'm very reluctant to go against what I said on Les Neverton a few months back, despite the current situation. Yeah, I'm going to stick with what I said for now. I remember revising my initial prediction for Everton, because he did start the season relatively well, and I think I said that'll finish somewhere between, was it 7th and 9th that I said? And I think, although things look terrible at the minute, there's reasons behind why things are terrible. And I think as soon as Everton get the players back, and I remember saying this last year in relation to Liverpool, I remember saying at the time, as soon as Liverpool get Van Dijk back, your midfielders back in midfield, Everton will return back to normal. And that's what's happened at Anfield. And from an Everton perspective, I think the same will be the case. I think as soon as Calvert-Lewin in particular is back, and then you've got Mina back in the back line, with Charleston playing every week, hopefully, the core doing the kind of box-to-box role that he seems to be really capable of doing, I think Everton will just start to pick up results again. But it remains to be seen whether Benitez will stay in charge between now and that happening, because I do think the prospect of the board kind of, I don't know what's the
bending,
word, kind of
bending to the pressure,
yeah, a little bit, yeah, just kind of like freezing a little bit and just putting the axe down, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I think I would keep Maffer in charge and things like that, and I think if you do, your season will generally be fine, but you just never know with the Everton decision making process whether that'll be the case. And the second question. One thing
that's
FSU,
hard. Yeah, that's a hard
one. One thing FSU were really good at, only on the sporting side of things, on the culture side of things, they haven't been the best at this, but on the sporting side of things, they have learned from mistakes on the sporting side. Initially, we were signing players. We signed Andy Carroll, for example. But we really rushed that one because we just lost Fernando Torres. So that was a rushed one. They haven't rushed one since, really. Mm. They haven't really dedicated extortionate amounts to homegrown players, English players, which is what we did early on with, I mean, 20 million for Jordan Henderson turned out to be great, but at the time it was deemed as a lot. Spent a fair bit on Charlie Adams, Stuart Downing, players like that. Liverpool have learned from that.
Can I just say something on Jordan Henderson, by the way? I think he's only been a success because of his own mindset, and I feel like the business wasn't probably the best. I don't think they would have seen maybe that side of him. And I could be really harsh, but I just feel like he's prolonged his success at the club because of his own mindset to be like, you know, successful. I don't think they bought a player with what his career trajectory in mind. I think they were kind of looking at this young English talent, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. I think initially when he came in, I think he was playing right wing in a flat bank of four, I think. Mm. So, yeah, Liverpool certainly didn't have that in mind when he bought him. Mm. I'm assuming he just had like a driven English prospect who was still only 20, I think, at the time. But yeah, you might be right there. And Liverpool also made loads of mistakes when it comes to signing players who have got youth on their side, but they were just a bit too young. So, Iago Aspas, Luis Alberto, players like that who, okay, you want to invest in young players who've got who you can sell on or who will dedicate a decade of time to your club maybe. But the bottom line is, A, they have to be good enough, and B, while also having potential, they have to be able to contribute immediately because it's the Premier League, it's Liverpool. So over time anyway, FSG just, I've learned from mistake after mistake. One thing with Everton, Mashiri doesn't seem to be doing that much. He seems to keep making the same mistakes, and I don't think Everton will ever really sleepwalk into major troubles. I think the squad is just generally too good to get relegated, really. I don't want to be naive in saying that. I think there was a team a few years back, weren't they, and that was the general line, that they're too good to get relegated, and they did eventually go down. It might have been Newcastle. Yeah, can't remember who it was, but I don't think it'll ever be that bad. But I think it could be ominous if 4 years time or something, if Everton is still drifting around 10th, that will be a decade under Mashiri of just staying in the exact same position because you've got no idea how to climb, but you're too good to drop, if you know what I mean. Don't know if you've got any thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, I have, but a lot of what you said. My only concern is, as I said, if you look at it from two points, the start point and where we are now, so the start of his era and where we are now, I wouldn't even say Everton have stagnated. I just feel like they've, if you look at what the quality of the squad and the spending power available and things, Everton have actually regressed ever so slightly. And, you know, you could say that because of the manager you got in place, who's probably not going to be long-term based on what we're seeing. So I think they regressed. And the concern is, if you don't learn your lessons soon, these marginal regressions are just going to become more frequent, and they're going to happen over a few more years. And when you're only really kind of mid-table side, then you might regress to low mid-table. And the gap really isn't that far from low mid-table and kind of battling to stay up. Especially if the teams below you are doing things right. Norwich look like they might be back with a chance of staying up. Newcastle obviously going to be a completely different side in the next few years. They've kind of, they're two teams. I know Norwich are up and down, but say Newcastle are almost guarantees to hover around that bottom six area when they're in the Premier League. But, you know, they're going to not be there anymore. And I'm with you. I don't think Everton are going to get relegated, but all I'm saying is, if you continue to make these mistakes and these kind of minor regressions, it could end up becoming a disaster. You know, it could end up lead to some sort of relegation. And I think at the moment, Everton might just get away with it because they may just be living on stature a little bit, being like a stable Premier League side, so you still manage to land on decent players. But we'll have to see. I'm conscious that we've spoke a lot about Everton, and maybe we should speak a little bit more about Liverpool and the actual game itself. I mean, I was going to laugh and say where it's won and lost, but I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? One question I do have on Liverpool, though, Josh, if you're happy to move on, is just because of everything that we talked about earlier with them, what in your eyes, from like the Liverpool supporters side of things, what do you think the ambitions are this season? Like, what would be deemed only as a success? AKA, what I'm asking you is, do you need the Premier League or Champions League for it to be seen as a success this season, based on what Liverpool are doing?
I think for it to be deemed as a success, you would probably have to have one of the Premier League or the Champions League. But I think you can't really ask for more than a title challenge and the latter stages of the Champions League, because it, to an extent, as long as you're providing a title challenge and you're into the knockout, the real latter stages of a knockout competition, to an extent, you are open to just variants. It can get decided. And at the end of the day, two of City, Chelsea and Liverpool are going to go without a Premier League title this season. So the two that don't win, it can't be deemed as having bad seasons, because there's probably going to be about 2 or 3 points in it, if that. And when it comes to the Champions League, again, it's just so much at play. Look at the last time Liverpool got knocked out of the Champions League, I think. You could look at both times, but the last season Liverpool got knocked out of the Champions League, it was purely on the back of a terrible 45 minutes in Madrid. And the rest of it was generally okay. Because of that terrible 45 minutes, we were out. And I think the year before, again, we got knocked out to a Madrid side, the different Madrid side this time, in my opinion, purely because of Adrian. Purely because of the goalkeeper. I'm not joking. Purely because of the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I remember you throwing dart at his face on the dartboard, I think.
That, I'm still scared from that, mate. Anytime he takes to the field, I'm an absolute bag of nerves. But yeah, you are just open to the elements when it comes to getting that high. You definitely expect to be in with the shout. You have to be in with the shout. If you're not challenging and you get knocked out earlier in the Champions League, then you've failed without doubt. But you just have to be kind of competing. You just have to be challenging. But having said that, I do think it's highly plausible that Liverpool will win one of the big two. I'm not sure what. And if I had to put money on one now, what would you say?
Probably...
I think probably the Champions League.
Yeah, I was going to say Champions League. On that then, I'll answer first, just so you know I'm not copying you. Who do you think is going to win the Premier League? Because I weirdly still think it might be City, you know?
I couldn't possibly pick a team, but I think the Premier League's just more suited to a team like City. Because as I said, when you open to the elements, you open to variance. Variance just seems to sting City a bit less. And the reason it seems to sting them a bit less is because Guardiola's team just have total control of everything. You know, if you watch their games, to an extent it's boring, because they're in control of so much. There's no like competition. They've got the ball all the time. They're facing about 6 shots, 8 shots a game, and they're taking about 15, 16 themselves from better locations and everything. So, and they've got depth and all that. So I wouldn't disagree with you, but I wouldn't put me name to any of them. But in the Champions League,
yeah,
I would lean towards Liverpool above City. Probably Chelsea above City as well.
I was just going to say on that, it made me laugh a little bit when we were having that conversation then, because I was thinking, you could make a case really that it's kind of those three same teams who are going to probably be pushing for the Champions League, because...
And Bayern Munich, I think.
I was just about to say, beyond Bayern Munich, who I think they've lost two all season. So by their standards, they're not unbelievable, but they're still, you know, top of the league. They're above Dortmund by a point or so. But beyond Bayern, who's going to be the biggest threat? Can you think?
No, I do think it will come from one of those four teams. I don't think PSG are enough of a team to win that tournament. I think that you can't. I saw it during the week. I think it was Carragher and people like that saying Thierry Henry and things saying you just can't win a tournament like that defending with seven players. So you can win League One, but you can't win the Champions League against you, because you're going to be coming up against elite opposition. And Liverpool defend with 11 players. City defend with 11 players. Chelsea defend with 11 players. Bayern.
I know a lot of people, probably yourself included, but I know a lot of people listening and watching would have missed it, but you actually saw it in that game against City last week. Obviously, it was on at the same time as the Porto win for Liverpool. But I have to admit, I did watch the City game instead. And yeah, you could just see it and summarise really well just then. Seven players, you know, you've basically got three attackers, which, okay, you've got that counter attack and threat, and maybe that ties in with it a little bit. But when you're playing teams like City, you've got to have more players defending, and City fully deserved the win. You know, they were by far the better team.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Rolling it back to the derby then, we'll do it like this. So from your perspective, you're the inside man at Goodison and you're feeding information to Liverpool. What should Liverpool target? What are you most worried about?
It's actually a really tough question at the moment because, as I say, I think the team is very poor. I'm probably looking at that right side as a problem. You know, Coleman playing right back, I think that's been an issue for a long time. He's been a fantastic player. You know, five or six years ago, definitely wouldn't have been saying that. But I think at the moment, he looks quite poor. And obviously, if you think of the, maybe not necessarily the threat of, say, giving the ball to Mane and him running at him, although I think that will be an issue. I'm thinking more about the kind of like, Trent switches into that area, you know, the starting the attack maybe out to the right and then putting it over to the left. And if I remember correctly, the derby last year, Liverpool scored a really good goal with something similar to that. I think it involved, was it Thiago on that occasion?
Yeah, I think, are you talking about Goodison?
Yeah, Goodison, yeah.
In the early stages at the start, was this?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was a really intricate move, yeah, and it just kind of...
I think it was Mane who scored, actually.
Yeah, that might have been. I'm not sure. I think Henderson was involved in it. Salah was involved in it. But yeah, that was a really good move. That Liverpool started on fire in that game, actually.
Yeah. So I think that is definitely going to be a concern. But look, the team's going to likely be maybe a 4-4-1-1. It's going to be really compact, really difficult to break down. Kind of like a lot of what these games have been in the past at Goodison. You know, what we haven't really mentioned yet, Josh, is Liverpool don't really tend to enjoy this game. You know, although they don't lose it that often, I don't think they've lost any of the last nine. They just seem to struggle to win it. You know, get on the right side of the results, and I guess
it's such a niggly game. I think the ball's out of play a lot more than usual. Lots of fouls, and you never seem to be in space. Goodison feels like a relatively tight pitch, even though Anfield is as well, I suppose. But yeah, and to be honest, there's been the odd little clear cut moment the past few years, and they seem to fall to Salah at Goodison, but Pickford seems to keep pulling out these saves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just generally, it seems to be a difficult place to go and control, you know, to keep total control at all times. Just because, as I said, Everton seemed capable of turning derbies into scraps in the middle of the park and with lots of second balls and things like that and that sort of stuff. So I think generally it is difficult to go there and put the result beyond a coin flip, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, just do Watford did, mate. They did it all right a few weeks ago. Is there any way you see how Everton could do anything to hurt Liverpool at the moment? I made sure to give that to you first because I didn't fancy it.
No, I'm not sure really. I think set pieces are a potential area that Everton could exploit, but then I don't think Mina is fit, is he?
No, he's not.
Calvert-Lewin's obviously going to be missing, so you've got a bit less of a strength there. But I think potentially Everton can kind of follow a bit of a route that Brentford paved. I think Everton could do what Brentford did, and I think you can look at Trent in a defensive capacity, particularly in the air. And I think if you put Richarlison up against Trent and kind of overload Trent's side and deliver your crosses in that direction, like Brentford teams. Brentford scored all three, I think it was three goals against Liverpool by overloading the back stick, basically. And even if a Brentford player didn't win the first header, the second ball, because there was like three of them there, the second ball would fall to a Brentford player. The difference with Brentford, I suppose, is Brentford were playing a back five at the time. So they were pushing forward like a wide centre-back and things like that. The system allowed them to do that. I'm not sure Everton's 4-4-1-1 or whatever will have to adapt slightly differently. But I think, I suppose that's kind of what I'd be looking at. I'd be looking at getting Richarlison around Trent and generally putting aerial balls in that area and things like that. But it is going to be difficult because I do think it sounds a bit stupid, but you do to an extent need to score two to get something from Liverpool. And I can't see Everton scoring twice. No. But then again, I'm not sure I'll see Liverpool scoring twice at Goodison. There's just something about Goodison. It's a difficult place.
The thing with that run as well, I think obviously Liverpool have been deserving of it. But you, there's a reason why I guess it's a record-breaking run because it's quite hard to sustain. So I guess it stops at some point, scoring that and two or more goals and however many you have. But I just don't see this being it. And I actually disagree. I think this might be the one where Liverpool might get a couple.
Well, I was going to say then, is there any feeling that this could get bad? How bad is it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's bad. And I think definitely.
Like, say for example, it got bad at Old Trafford a few weeks back. Mm. Liverpool went there, obviously hit them for five. I think that's been in the works for years, that one. And it finally happened type thing. From my perspective, I don't see this as... I don't think that's going to happen. But you... So that's why I'm asking you, if you know what I mean, yeah?
Yeah, I can't... Famous last words here. I can't imagine Everton, say, being down 4-0 at half-time. I think that was madness. But I think the difference maybe is, United approached that game as, it doesn't matter who we're up against, we're Man United, we should be playing a certain way.
Rafa won't do that, will he?
No, exactly. Everton won't be going high-pressing, for example, or trying to go all-out attack. And I think that's when Liverpool can punish you. I think Liverpool have to work harder for the goals in this game because they're going to have to break teams, break Everton down. And, what I would say is Everton haven't been that bad when it's backs against the walls kind of stuff, when they're not expected to basically go out and attack. I think City managed to take them apart, but it's always a little bit tougher away from home. If that game finished 3-0, but Eddie played Tottenham at Goodison the week before. That was 0-0. Tottenham didn't really have a sniff. Obviously, we've already touched on that United drew 1-1. And Everton's record at home against Liverpool does suggest they do normally do a decent job of keeping them at bay. But it just feels like this time around, I think it's going to be just a lot more one-sided than it has been in the past.
Yeah, one major strength I think Liverpool are going into this one with, I've just mentioned before how it's generally difficult to control things at Goodison, but it's perfect timing really that Liverpool now have a midfield three of Fabinho, Thiago and Henderson. I think we will need that midfield three for this game. I don't think Thiago and Fabinho, whenever both of them have started, I don't think they've lost any. I think they've won them all, except one, drawing one of them. Thiago just offers, obviously, we know what he offers. But alongside Henderson and alongside Fabinho, you do really get a foothold in the middle of the park. And
I think Thiago is going to be the worry this game, definitely, from an Everton perspective, because he's got the ability, hasn't he, to just dictate in that area and just move the ball at so much quicker than others do. And, you know, even those little gaps that do appear, he's got the ability to penetrate them. So it's his perfect game, really.
Yeah, I mean, he was brilliant in his first game at Goodison, I thought he was outstanding in that game. And obviously, he set up the winner, but it was given us offside.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, should we do predictions or is there anything else you want to add?
We can, but yeah, I honestly think maybe the crowd might, if a challenge goes in early or something, might maybe get the crowd on side. You might get a goal. But I'm expecting something like a 3-1 Liverpool. I think that would be, for some, I think Evertonians would take that at the moment, actually, based on what I'm hearing, so I'm saying. So 3-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, see, I don't feel as confident. I do feel safe, don't get me wrong. But I do think that Blues are generally a bit too down on the dumps about it. I don't think it's as bad as yous are letting on. But you know, I don't know how it might be, but
yeah.
From my perspective, I do think Liverpool will win, largely because of that midfield. I think that midfield could be too good, but I'm going to say 2-0, I think. But
play a bit more conservative.
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool will want this one to go down the route of a basketball game or anything like that, where it's end to end, and I don't think Liverpool will want to give the crowd any reason to get up at all. I think Liverpool needs to play in a way almost like City played against United a few weeks back. Did you see that? Obviously, they didn't score as many as Liverpool did at Old Trafford the week before. They only won 2-0, but they just didn't give United a sniff. It was just total control, slow tempo the whole game, things. And I think Liverpool need to keep a lid on the atmosphere if possible.
Just score early, I genuinely think it would turn toxic. I think an early goal changes it.
Well, I think the overlap, it might have been Gary Neville's overlap before the season, and they were just generally speaking about the prospect of Benitez at Goodison, and I think Carragher flagged the possibility of Liverpool being a few goals up against Everton and the Anfield crowd singing Rafa Benitez's name. Now, I think at Goodison, I wouldn't put that past Liverpool fans to do that. If Liverpool get a lead or whatever, and it's fairly comfortable or whatever, and if that starts happening, I think it will get a bit messy, but I don't know. Don't want to start talking about that, do we?
Yeah, no, we'll wait and see. But as I said, I think, let's wait and see. But my opinion is it'll be a fairly comfortable win for Liverpool, this. And Everton will have to try and regroup afterwards when these fixtures level out a little bit. I mean, they don't necessarily get that much easier after this. Arsenal at home, you've only lost 1 in 10, which was against Liverpool. Palace away, Chelsea away, Leicester at home, and then you get Burnley with a bit of a respite.
Yeah, I just hope Rafa lasts through it, because I just don't see the logic behind getting rid. But should we round up then? I mean, I'm not sure if you want to pass on any roundup message to Analyze and Everton listeners. When will we be back? That sort of thing.
Yeah, as I said, well, maybe we'll let the next couple of games play out. Maybe, you know what, Josh? Shall we plan something between us for ahead of the Palace game? So that's Liverpool out the way, Arsenal out the way, and then Palace. And we can kind of reassess there. So 2 weeks we'll do an Analyze and Everton. And obviously Analyze and Anfield will be as usual.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is the Christmas period now, really. So there's a game every 3 days. So from an analyse and Anfield perspective, we'll do our best to fit in as many as we can. Obviously, we play Wolves this weekend, but because this is an analyse and Everton, analyse and Anfield crossover episode, we're not going to speak about Wolves. Southampton game as well, we didn't speak about, but we'll try and restore normal service next week. Yeah, as always. So thanks for tuning in. Dave, thanks for joining us, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, everyone.
And look forward to the Merseyside derby. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.